53 years ago tomorrow, science got an assist from science fiction when the TV series Star Trek premiered. Let's tune in on this episode of Sky Talk with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, did you watch Star Trek from its onset?
That's a really great question, Dave. I think I recall seeing the first few episodes. And then because of, you know, by what I was up to at the time and the time this was on, I don't think I got to watch all of the episodes in sequence. Probably the next season I did, but that's quite all right because as it turns out, this program, after three seasons in prime time, almost went to syndication immediately. So I could catch up with it right away.
Hard to believe, first of all, that it only existed for three seasons because
it seems like it lasted forever.
It sure does. And let's also put that time in context. There were three networks and educational television and not a lot of social media choices, and a lot of people were tuned in.
And certainly not like today, where we have hundreds of cable channels available to us. No, there was very, very little available to us to sort of glom onto. However, the other sort of bookend on this that it's been challenging for me to sort of accept is that all three seasons of Star Trek were done about 6 months before astronauts left Earth for that very first trip to the moon.
So it started while Apollo was well underway.
Indeed, it started when Apollo was well underway in 1966, and it ended in January of 1969. So it wasn't until 6 months later that Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins, made their way to the moon for their historic venture there. But this program certainly did spawn certainly one of the most lucrative franchises ever. It certainly spawned a tremendous number of other science fiction programs that tried to imitate it or emulate it or any of those sorts of things. In fact, you probably could say that this also fueled the fantasies for some kinds of space exploration as well.
Not easy to emulate in large measure because it transcended science fiction and also spoke very much of the politics and society at that time in America.
I also find it really interesting that the way Gene Roddenberry, the actual creator and producer of this, actually thought of it was that he thought of this as like a space western. And indeed, his background came from writing for programs of the 1950s like Have Gun Will Travel. So he was very much of that Western genre where there's a story to be told and there's a hero and there's an adversary. And so if you look at all the Star Trek programs, they seem to be set up in a similar way.
Say, Derek, September means shorter numbers of minutes of sunlight with a diminished opportunity to check it out, what's available.
Yeah, you're right, Dave. Sunrise is now at 6:34 a.m., sunset at 7:23 p.m. That means we have more time to look at the night sky, where we'll find a waxing crescent moon sneaking up on Saturn tonight. It zips past Saturn during the day, and then tomorrow we'll find it creeping a little bit further beyond that. Saturn right now is just above the top star of the teapot shape of the zodiac constellation Sagittarius. Jupiter, on the other side of the Milky Way, over to the west, Jupiter's not far above the red giant star Antares of Scorpius. The two planets, as I mentioned, straddle the southern Milky Way galaxy, and this is a really great target for binocular observing. By the way, we're running out of time to see Jupiter in the evening sky. It's setting earlier and earlier these days, so you need to get out and catch it as soon as the sky gets dark.
A giant star glows red for a different reason than Mars, for example.
Indeed, that's a great point. We're looking at Mars and we see that it glows red and we might assume that, is it like any sort of red giant star? Indeed, it's not. The reason why it's red is because it has iron oxide mixed into its surface. So essentially, the surface of Mars is rusty, but that's not the same situation for stars. In this case, we're talking about a star that has aged in its life, and as its temperature cools, it gets redder and redder and redder. In fact, the coolest stars of all are almost brown in color, whereas the hottest stars are bluish in color. So if we look at that whole spectrum of stars, it goes from the hottest being blue, down to white, down to yellow, coming down to our temperature right around the yellow star, and then moving on down to orange, and then red, and then brown as they cool off. We're going from very, very high surface temperature stars of, say, 20,000 degrees or so, down to stars where we find surface temperatures of perhaps 4,000 degrees.
As you've stated many times, it's those hottest burning stars that burn bright but don't last very long.
Live fast, die young, sometimes leave a good-looking corpse.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on SkyTalk.